Okay, here we go. Take two. So this is Joanna, and welcome everybody to this special bonus class with our guest faculty, Makita Pennycook. And the title of this class is Diversity and Inclusion in the Coaching Industry and in Your Coaching Practice. And I am just thrilled to be sharing this call and to be sharing this conversation with all of you. This call is on a topic that has been a steep learning curve for me personally over the last 2 years. It's a topic that I consciously work on every single day. It's a topic that I make mistakes around even as I work on it and just continue to learn more and more about. It's also a topic that I feel is so important for any practitioner who's committed to integrity, who is committed to social justice, for any practitioner who's committed to co-creating real transformation with your clients and who's committed to making your work and practice welcome to everyone, nourishing to everyone, nurturing to everyone. We lightly touch on this topic in our listening module in Sacred Depths when we take a look at listening filters. And you guys all know I talk about the importance of checking all of your privilege and all of your biases when you're listening. And today we're going to be diving much deeper into all of that and more, and specifically looking through the lens of race. But, of course, diversity, inclusion, and privilege aren't only limited to issues of race. We need to be mindful and actively work at this when it comes to gender, when it comes to sexuality, when it comes to religion, when it comes to income level, education level, body type, on and on. So many different topics around privilege. So a lot of what we're going to look at today, I think, can be adapted to any of those areas. We'll have only an hour today, and really this is a topic that requires way more than 60 minutes, but I know that this introduction will inspire you to want to learn more, to explore more, to do more, and to go deeper with it. And I feel just so honored, and I just feel all of us here on the call or listening to the recording are honored to have Makita Pennycook with us today to help us step into this very important material. I've known Makita for nearly 5 years now, and not only is Makita an outstanding coach, she actually happens to be a graduate of Sacred Depths, but she was outstanding before even Sacred Depths. But also, Makita is just one of my favorite people. Her authenticity and her wisdom and her warmth and her ability to layer and go deep are just such a gift. And I've got her official bio, and so I'm going to read it now. Mindset and empowerment coach Makita Pennycook is a sought-after speaker, teacher, writer, and workshop facilitator with over 2 decades of experience in leadership and personal development. She helps her clients feel safe enough to give their dreams permission to be heard. And then she helps them navigate whatever changes come as a result of saying all that out loud. After navigating multiple major life and career changes, Makita firmly believes that fear is temporary, but regret is permanent. I love that saying. Her experiences with change have taught her that the hardest part of change is the chaos of the in-between, the space between what was and what is not yet. She strives to create safe and sacred spaces for her clients to move through that chaos so they can find their brave and rise into their greatness. Welcome, Makita. I'm so glad that you're here.
Thank you, Joanna. I'm thrilled to be here, excited to just be with everyone and to just dive into this topic. every time someone introduces me, I think, wow, I sound pretty amazing in that person's mouth.
You are amazing, even more amazing than what I articulated. Well, and, you know, as we step in, what I wanted to mention, and I know this is important to you, Makita, is that this topic can be a really difficult one, and one that can feel, for some, a little bit confronting. It can bring up resistance or feelings of fight or flight, and I know that when this conversation is handled with consciousness and love, that it's not confronting, but that the confrontation can actually be a good thing. This is about us all looking a little more deeply and authentically at ourselves. And I love your approach to all of this, Makita, and your commitment to being really clear and direct, but also your commitment to this conversation being a judgment-free zone with just loads of kindness. You shared this with me beforehand, and I just really wanted to frame all that at the start of our conversation.
Yes, thank you. Yeah, it can be very easy to drop into judgment or shame in this topic in particular. And my favorite phrase, I need to trademark it, is to RLK it, which means to bring ridiculous levels of kindness to yourself as we sort of step into this space and really look at this. So RLK it throughout this call. This is a judgment-free zone for sure.
Awesome. RLK it both, like, for people that we, you know, as we hear, and also towards ourselves too, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I love that. Well, so let's start here. I think it'd be important just to ask you about the difference between diversity and inclusion, because those two terms are used together a lot, but they actually mean a little bit different things. So what's the difference between diversity and inclusion?
Yeah, they can often get used interchangeably, and they are not interchangeable. So diversity, so if you imagine a table, diversity says everyone can sit at the table. So if you look at the table, there is a diverse range of faces and voices at the table. That's what diversity says. Diversity is more about a numbers game. Inclusion says that every voice at that table is heard and valued equally. Mm. So no voice is louder or more valuable, but every voice is valuable. And in the coaching industry and in our coaching practices, what that would look like is that when we encounter, and I'm going to use this phrase on and off throughout this call, BIPOC, which is a acronym for Black, Indigenous, People of Color. So it's sort of very inclusive for people of color, but not just race, but also the indigenous community as well gets pulled into that. So in the coaching industry, that means that those voices have expression, not from a let's throw one in here or there, but really that all of those voices get equal value in contributing to the conversation. Is that helpful?
Yeah, very. And I love just, you know, all of what you said, but especially at the end, that it's not, you know, sometimes we think, oh, it needs to be diverse. Let me make sure there's just one or two voices thrown
right
in there. But that's not what inclusion is. I love how you put it, that it's about each voice being heard with equal weight. And it feels like also just like equal honor and equal respect.
Exactly. Yes.
So another term that is used a lot in this conversation is white privilege. And I know we're going to, you know, privilege is an important piece to look at when we look at diversity and inclusion. I wanted you to explain what white privilege is.
Yeah. So that's a term that can be triggering for some folks, right? So white privilege says that there are benefits that white people enjoy just by virtue of the color of their skin. So the systems in our world, mostly in the Western world, really are set up so that white is the norm and everything else is sort of an other. And that becomes obvious, or you can sort of sense that, because very rarely is someone referred to outside of conversations around race and inclusion, is someone referred to as a white woman or a white male. It's usually just they're a man or a woman, unless they're Black or Asian or Native American or Indigenous, then that label gets attached. So white privilege just says that there are a series of benefits that our society affords white people that people of color, BIPOCs, do not get to enjoy as well or as equally in that same space. Now, what white privilege doesn't say is that you haven't had any challenges. White privilege is not saying you've not had any challenges that you've had to overcome. White privilege says that your race is not one of those challenges that you've had to overcome. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and, you know, this last piece that you just said, it feels really important because what's been my experience as I've been, you know, talking with people a little bit about race and privilege, if they haven't already been introduced to the idea of white privilege, is, you know, the defenses can go up sometimes pretty quickly, but I have all of these troubles, and, you know, there are biases against me, and, you know, and all of that. And, you know, what you said there at the end is, like, it doesn't, just because you have white privilege doesn't mean that you've been denied other privileges or haven't had hardships. But it does mean that you have to own that the color of your skin affords you a lot of privileges that you may not have, you may not even be aware of, because they just seem so normal to you in society.
Precisely, precisely. And there, people do get triggered by that phrase a lot of times, because they associate, when they hear that term, it's saying they've never had to overcome anything. And that's not what white privilege is saying at all.
Yeah. I feel like the other reason why people sometimes get a little defensive when they hear that is they'll go on the defense really quickly, too. Mm-hmm. And if it's named that they have white privilege, they take it to mean that automatically they're oppressing others in conscious ways.
Right, yeah. And I think also with that term white privilege, to add to what you said, Joanna, around oppressing, it automatically means you're oppressing another person. It also can sometimes automatically feel like we're saying you're a bad person.
Yeah.
And that dichotomy of good versus bad, that binary thinking of good versus bad, gets in the way of us really being able to look at this issue. And so white privilege is not naming you a bad person. It's not saying you're consciously or even unconsciously oppressing other people. It's simply saying that you have a series of privileges simply because you were born white. That's really all that is saying.
Yeah, I know that's definitely something that I grappled with briefly when I first really stepped into more consciousness around this, because there's this, like, desire to be a good person and to be a righteous person, and, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, when you're confronted with the fact that you have all of these privileges, you can go into that place of making it bad. I don't know if this is helpful for everyone, but just, like, one of my when I was first learning about this concept of white privilege, one of the examples that was given to me kind of just, like, blew my mind. It was so simple and so obvious, yet one that I had never thought of. And it was really helpful for me because then it helped me see just how pervasive white privilege is. But the example that was given to me was, you know, when you go to a hotel and, you know, a lot of hotels are, you know, you go to your hotel room and they have lots of toiletries, you know, complimentary toiletries there for their guests. Usually it's part of those toiletries, they have shampoo. It's like, oh, great, you know, there's shampoo, but the complimentary shampoo is really only for white people's hair, not for people of color.
Right. Yes.
That's a trivial little thing, but for me it was this, like, example of how, just to what detail the pervasiveness of it is.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah, so that assumption of normal, right?
Yeah,
that's what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah,
where it's like, it's just, of course, you know, you don't even question it because you just think it's, like, centered on whiteness, so you just think it's the norm. Well, so let's start to focus the conversation more on coaching and on our coaching practices. So what are the ways that a coach's unchecked privilege and bias can show up in their business, both in terms of their client work, like the session, client sessions themselves, and also just in terms of how their business is seen from the outside?
Okay. So I think I want to start with the second half, so the sort of marketing visibility piece of it, and how the business is seen. What that looks like is, I'm just going to give you an example from my life, my work. So I'm a coach, and I work with a diverse group of people. And sometime within the last year, I started looking back through all of my opt-ins. I was making some changes on my website and started looking through all of my opt-ins and realized I have six or seven different, I have an entire resource page, and realized there wasn't a single one of those resources that featured a person of color, a woman of color, not one. And here I am, a woman of color who works with people of color. And yet in all of my material that was on my website, there was no representation of that. And so here I am having that issue. And that's one way in which that our unchecked privilege can, or our biases can get in the way of, with regards to our marketing, or it can show up in our marketing and our inner visibility. It's not having that presence, even if it's just a photo. Joanna, with the Sacred Depth promotions that you did this year, I noticed that as I scrolled through the page, I noticed that you had several images of women of color. Which what those pictures said to me as a woman of color, and I'm going to try really hard not to speak for all women of color because everyone's experiences are unique. So I'm going to try really hard to just speak to my experience. But what that said to me, Joanna, as I looked through that, was that that said that I am welcome. Someone who looks like me is welcome in your space. Now, whether or not I feel safe with you still remains to be seen, because I in particular, and I would argue that a lot of women of color have what I refer to as a high BS monitor. We're really good at picking up when people are trying to bullshit us. Sorry, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to cuss, but so forgive me. So it means that because of how we have to move through the world, or how I have to move through the world, I tend to be pretty skeptical. And so I'm waiting, or I'm looking to see the rest of how you're showing up. And that's going to tell me if you're a potentially safe space for me. So are you speaking up against the harm that people of color, Black, Indigenous people of color are experiencing? Are you centering voices other than your own, or those of who look like you on your social media pages, in newsletter or blog posts that you might have on your website? And then does the things that you share, do they make an assumption that everyone's experience is like yours? So I'm going to give you an example of that last one, because recently I was scrolling on Instagram and saw a quote by a woman who's the coach. She's a lovely woman. I actually know she's a friend of mine. And the quote said that the state of your life is nothing more than a reflection of the state of your mind. Right? So that sounds really empowering, really inspiring. And if I just change my mind, all will be better. And what that statement is actually very, very harmful for people of color. Because it ignores that there is a very real system that is set up to keep people of color from advancing or from making progress. Yeah. And so it's thinking about those kinds of things that will let me, so knowing those things is sort of a way that where your biases can show up, which actually tells, communicates to BIPOC that you are not a safe place and I'm not welcome in your space. Yeah. That makes sense. Is that helpful?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like what I hear you saying is, you know, I think the first place people, entrepreneurs think to go is, okay, images. You know, are my images diverse? You know, back to that diversity and inclusion conversation, right? And that's a good start, but that's just the first level and layer. What I hear you saying is then you need to move into inclusion. And all of those different examples that you gave are examples that, you know, really mirror and show that you're thinking about inclusivity and that you're approaching your work and your business and your practice with a perspective of inclusivity.
Exactly. It says that you are really committed to making the space that you are creating, right? So you have a platform, whatever that looks like for you, you are committed to creating a space that is safe for all people.
Yeah.
That's what those things will say. And if your bias is unchecked, you won't do that. And people of color will notice that and they will stay away.
Yeah. I want to get to, in a moment, to, you know, how it can show up in coaching practice, but it feels like a good moment to insert this. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about, you know, how over the last couple of years this has just become so a priority of mine, and how, you know, I really, like, I work to do all of the things that you said, but as I mentioned earlier, sometimes I make mistakes. What's the question I want to ask you? You know, like, can you talk a little bit about when those of us with privilege make mistakes, and what should we do if we make mistakes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what I will say about when you make a mistake, and you will, right? So you're not going to get it right, and I've talked to more than one person who has said to me, well, I'm afraid I'm going to say it wrong, or I'm going to do it, you know, I'm going to make a mistake, and you will. So the first place is to accept that that is going to happen. It is inevitable, and it's not the end of the world when that happens. So there are a couple of things that will be really helpful that will show the people in your life who don't look like you that you are truly committed to this. The first thing I would say is to resist the knee-jerk reaction to sort of explain, excuse, apologize, you know, to do all those things, to justify what happened. Resist the knee-jerk reaction to do that. Again, it comes back to, you've made a mistake. It doesn't make you the world's worst human being, right? It doesn't automatically make you a bad person. So resist that knee-jerk reaction to try to explain yourself. And then I would say apologize, say that you're sorry, and do very work your best to not make it about you, right? So I am sorry that that thing I said or did harmed you or hurt you. I'm sorry. And it connected to that, I really want to help us to get away from the statement, I didn't mean to do that. That wasn't my intention, right? Because impact trumps intention every single day of the week and twice on Sunday, right? So the impact of what you said or did is more important than your intention. So if you apologize and you say that wasn't my intention, you've made it about you. And so you have to apologize and recognize that the apology is not the end. The apology is the beginning. Because after you apologize, we're going to now look for you changing your behavior. So apologize and change your behavior. Do better next time. And don't repeat the same mistake again if you can avoid it, right? So apologize and recognize that that's just the beginning, that your behavior is really going to demonstrate for us, or the person that you might have harmed, that you are committed to the learning that's involved here, right? And so really committing to understand where what you did was problematic, so that you can make a change for the next time.
Yeah, I love that. So impact trumps intention. And when you make a mistake, no defenses, but instead apologize from your heart, say you'll do better, and then do better.
Yes, exactly. And we will watch for the doing better part.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about in actual coaching practice, you know, when you're in session with clients, what are some ways that a coach's unchecked privilege or bias can show up with clients? And also, like, what's the impact of that unchecked privilege?
Yeah, so when you ask that question, I had two things that came up almost immediately. And so I think for me, these two are the, I'm going to call these out because I think they're the most pervasive and the places where I think we can make the most change within the industry. The first is called spiritual bypassing. And so what spiritual bypassing looks like is taking the language of spirituality and using it as a way to avoid a hard conversation, avoid hearing criticism, avoid hearing someone's pain or hurt or grief. An example of that would be, let's just send them love from our hearts. Hmm. Can't we all just love each other? I'm just going to love and light that. Or, and I am a Black girl who grew up in Black church. And so if anyone on the call is also a Black woman or grew up in Black church, you know we like to pray about everything. We like to give everything to Jesus. But we don't talk about anything and we don't address anything. All of those things are spiritual bypassing. They're saying that's too hard. That feels too confronting. It's too painful. And I don't want to deal with that. So let's just cover it with love and light. Let's just make it better. By just ignoring it, spiritual bypassing. Because putting things under the rug has never been helpful in anybody's life. And in this situation, if a client is sharing something that's harmed them or that's been hurtful for them, some kind of trauma that they've had in their past they've been reignited by, if we spiritually bypass that, if we tell them that, you know, okay, well, just send them love through their heart, try to forgive them, pray about it, give it to your higher power, all of those things negate that person's experience. So spiritual bypassing. I just want to pause there and see if you have anything you need some clarity around or anything you want to add or unpack more there that you'd like me to unpack more.
Yeah, I do. And I should also mention we'll have time for Q&A at the end, hopefully, too, if anybody has, more questions. But, as you were just talking, what it made me think of is if you are white and you're working, you're coaching a person of color and they speak to a certain hardship, that specifically has to do with race or a way that they've been, have some bias or something mm-hmm. that's happened because of race, part of what spiritual, tell me if I'm getting this right, like part of spiritual bypassing would also be like, if you would ask like, well, what's your role in this? Mm. Or how did you bring this to you? There are absolute appropriate moments for questions like that in coaching, when it's a white person coaching a person of color, but there are moments where that is just not appropriate. Would you agree? Or do
not
you
at all.
More
I would agree
that?
Wholeheartedly. Yes, I will agree wholeheartedly on that, because what you say and what you're saying to that person in that moment is you are responsible for what happened to you.
Yeah.
And for people of color who are moving through the world, just their skin color makes them a target. And if someone has entered into this very sacred relationship with you and you throw that at them, that becomes a weapon that re-traumatizes them again. And so, yes, incredibly harmful to use that language.
Yeah, so that's something that we really have to be aware of. And I'd say, again, like with so many of the things we're talking about, even beyond race, when we look at all of the other privileges.
Right.
Something I mentioned earlier, again, sometimes the question of like, how did you attract that or what's your role in that can be really useful, but we need to really check ourselves before some of those questions.
Yes. Yeah. So now is the spiritual bypassing feel complete for right now?
Yeah.
Awesome. The other way that I see that unchecked privilege can show up in client work is a phrase called gaslighting. Mm-hmm. And so gaslighting is where we question someone's lived experience in a way that causes them to question what they experience. So it's from a movie that was actually called Gaslighting, the term emerged, and it's often present where we ask somebody, so the way gaslighting can show up is we try to present a different explanation for something that has caused someone harm or that landed on them in a negative way, and we do that without acknowledging the harm at all or minimizing it completely. And so that might show up as some version of, I think maybe you might have misunderstood that. Is it possible that this is what they might have meant by that? So it's really negating their lived experience and saying, oh, that didn't happen. Or I'm going to give it a little bit more concrete example with regards to if you're talking to a Black person. And, for example, if someone, if you're coaching a client and they're saying they're not getting promotions at work, for example, maybe you're a business coach or a career coach, and they say they're not getting promotions at work and they believe that it's because of their skin color, and you say some version of, well, I worked with another client, another woman of color, and she had a couple of challenges, but she was ultimately able to get her promotions and her raises. She just, you know, worked a little bit harder. What you've done with that, it sounds, you know, helpful and encouraging, but really what you've done is you've told your client that their lived experience is unimportant and it doesn't matter. And that what she's experienced is not actually real. So if we're starting to gaslight people in one form or another, it comes back to that impact versus intent. And it's incredibly harmful when we say to people, I think you might have misunderstood either what I was trying to say, or maybe you misunderstood what that person was trying to say. It completely disregards their lived experience.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that you just said that really struck me is that, you know, you might think that you're being helpful or you're trying to be helpful. And I think that's the, like, that's the tricky part. And it's certainly, like, the part that I'm always trying to be conscious of. Of course, you know, I'd guess most people that go into the coaching industry or transformational industry, certainly everyone that is on this call, we want to be helpful. You know, we're not in it to hurt people or to gaslight people. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be helpful. But it's that when we're not conscious of these things, mm-hmm. that's when it can kind of go in the wrong direction.
Right.
The other thing... I don't know. You can tell me if this feels important or not. Just that came up for me as you were talking now, Makita, is it feels like when you go into gaslighting mode, it's almost a little bit, this might just be my own experience, I don't know, but it's almost a little bit like you're closing your heart to the other person, not on purpose or consciously, but I don't even know how to articulate this exactly, but it almost feels like the more that we can keep our hearts open to everyone's experience and have more compassion for people that have experiences that are different than ours, the more successful we'll be in avoiding the gaslighting and the spiritual bypassing.
Yeah. You're not off base, Joanna. I think that we drop into gaslighting or spiritual bypassing, I feel like, when someone's pain either becomes too much for us to hold, right? I don't want to hold your pain, but in particularly the people who work with you, with big hearts, we sort of have learned through working with you how to really hold that space. Where we can sometimes get in trouble is thinking, and I think I said this earlier, that everyone's experience is the same.
Yeah.
Because they look like one way, or because we're all women, then all of our experiences are the same as women, or all women of color have had the same experience. And so when we forget the uniqueness of each individual person, that's when I think we can drop into that space because, well, if this person did it, then why can't this person do it? Yeah, that's not the way that it works, right? So it is just remembering that we get to hold the pain and grief, and that's a privilege. And I think also we may sometimes drop into that when we rush to try to fix a situation, right, for a client. We want to make it better for them, instead of just holding it with them.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the pieces in here that we haven't spoken about yet that I think is even a little harder to look at. I know that in my journey with all of this, it's been one of the hardest things to look at, is that everybody is biased. And the importance of looking at some of the beliefs that maybe we don't even think we have that were somehow, you know, hammered into us when we were younger, and unpacking those. And I was wondering if you could just speak a little bit to, like, hidden biases. And what we might do to uncover them.
Yeah, so that's so good. Such a great question. So we all have biases, all of us. I have bias, you have bias, Joanna. We all have biases. And if we come into this space assuming that, well, I've done the work, I'm good. If we come into the space, I'm a woman of color, so if I step into this space saying, I'm Black, I don't have any biases, that's a dangerous space. If I come in and say, I'm a feminist and I believe in all women, so I have no biases, that's a dangerous place. If I come in and I think, it'll be fine, I can help and fix whatever happens, I don't have any biases. If we start from the place of saying, I have no biases, then we will harm our clients, right? So earlier you asked, and we hadn't gotten around the impact that our biases, our unchecked biases, can have on our clients, right? We leave them feeling in a best case scenario, your client feels dismissed. Worst case scenario, we re-traumatize our clients by not looking at our biases. And so we have to, I believe starting place matters. So if I start from, I have no biases, then I become unwilling to see them when I'm called in about them, right? If I start from, I have biases, some of them I'm aware of, some of them I don't know about, when I get called in on my biases, because I've started with the assumption that I do have some biases that I may not be aware of, when I get called in, it becomes a place of curiosity, a place for me to sit and self-reflect and ask myself, not is this true, because that's a yes or no answer. Mm-hmm. The question is, how is this true for me? Mm-hmm. And reflect on that and allow that to guide the unpacking of the biases that you have that you are not aware that you have.
Yeah. I love what you say, that what's actually more dangerous than the bias itself is the making the assumption that you don't have the bias, or that you're not
right.
biased.
Right, exactly.
If you accept that you have the bias, then that you can work with it from there. Mm-hmm. But I think it goes back to the good bad thing. For most people, we're so scared of being quote unquote bad that we just tell ourselves, "I'm not biased,"
right.
And that's where the danger is.
Exactly, exactly. And you just did a whole shadow retreat, right?
We all are
made of light and shadow. We're all made of good and bad. It's not either all good or all bad.
No.
We've all got both. And being able to hold that and to sit with the discomfort that comes when someone says something and calls my attention to a bias or a prejudice or a racist something that I may not even be aware of, to hold the discomfort of that within myself and not project it back to the other person or try to project it back to other people, that's the work. Because it's that discomfort that we don't want to sit with. But if we can sit with the discomfort and recognize that I've just done something, I maybe have just done something that was bad, but it doesn't necessarily make me a bad person.
Yeah.
And be able to just hold that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so important. And, you know, it makes me also just think about fight or flight, you know, when we think, mm-hmm. like, I did that, I'm bad, that's when we go into fight, flight, or freeze, and there's really never a good and productive outcome there. But if we can move into, okay, I'm not bad, but what I just said was bad or a mistake, you know, whatever it is, then we can avoid the fight, flight, or unfreeze and go and move into those other pieces that we were talking about before, you know, apology and doing better, understanding a different way, all of those things.
Yeah. And so something just came up that that feels important to say here, because a lot of this is unfolding online and in social media space. Mm-hmm. And so if you share something or you do something and someone calls you out about it or calls you in, so it's more of a calling in, I think that in the women of color and the folks who are doing this work of sort of helping to educate, we're committed to calling in, which means that we want you to do better because we recognize that we're all in this together. So if someone calls you out or calls you in, rather, on something that you've posted, don't take it down. Don't delete it. Don't delete your comment. Don't remove the post because it's a learning, right? So it's your learning and the people who are following you in your community, on the platform that you have, all of those people are learning alongside you as well. But if you delete it, particularly if people have put some labor into helping you understand, you have silenced their voice, and you have told them that their voice does not matter. So while it feels uncomfortable to have it, this, you know, oh, God, I said this terrible thing, and then this person called me, told me I did it, and now everyone can see it, that feels uncomfortable. If you delete it, you're telling the person who called you in that their voice is not important to you. What they have to say doesn't matter. And it's saying that you are actually not as committed to the work as you say you are.
Yeah. Yeah, I had that, you know, about a year ago, I posted something that I thought was going to be helpful and valuable, and it turned out that it was not. It was a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And, it was painful at first to keep it up there. You know, I was called out, I was called in, in many different directions. And it took real work to keep on telling myself, like, no, this is important. It's important to be held accountable for the mistake. And if I am really going to consider myself a leader in the industry, I need to be willing to, reveal the mistakes and help people learn through it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, exactly. Can't be so fragile that you want to remove and show no evidence of your making mistakes, right? And so it's a vulnerable space to be in. But if we talk about wanting to be authentic and talk about wanting to be real and talk about wanting to be honest, then that includes not just when we're super successful and we hit all the marks, it's also when we miss the mark.
Yeah, so true. It's so true with all things. It's so true.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I wanna open up for any questions or comments that people have or takeaways. But before I do that, Makita, is there anything that we didn't touch on today that feels important for us to touch on?
Yeah, there's one thing that that I haven't yet touched on that feels important, and it's the use of the word but, B-U-T, but, and how really harmful that word is. So if we're engaging on this issue, social media, in a conversation with friends, wherever, and we say the phrase or any version of, I hear you, but, I understand what you're trying to say, but isn't it possible that, like, the use of the word but in this space is an immediate shutdown, because everything that came before the but becomes negated. And everything that came after the but says, I'm not hearing you. I'm not listening to you. I'm more concerned with validating my voice and my opinion. And that's what this is meant to. This is what I'm saying. So the but tells the person of color, your words don't matter. My words matter more. And so I really want to caution that as you're having these conversations and as we're engaging with this, that we really pay attention to the use of the word but. Because it is problematic.
I had not thought about that before. That feels like such an important point and really related to what you were sharing earlier about, like, when you make a mistake, don't explain it away.
Mm-hmm.
Just apologize.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, there's so many more pieces here, and, you know, this is just a toe dip in a moment, Makita, I'll ask you about how everybody can learn more. But before that, I just want to see, you know, if there are any questions, takeaways, pieces that anyone wants to bring up. I know it can sometimes feel hard to speak up on this because of everything that, you know, we've been talking about in this conversation, but I'd love to create space for that. There aren't, just because of the problems with technology, at the beginning of the call, we're a little bit of a more intimate group, so there's a lot of space here to chime forward. Let me get us into lecture mode, star two. Does anyone have any questions or, revelation, anything they want to share, this important takeaway from this call? We have a wonderful opportunity with Makita here to get questions answered. Star two. Michelle.
Hi. I have a question for Makita. I think, you know, often in people of color spaces, we talk about how we don't want to have to be the ones doing all the fix-it work for white people. So here's my question. How do white people work with each other to think through these, not that to be abandoned necessarily, but to really work with each other to become rigorous in thinking about questions related to inclusion?
Oh, hold on. Something. Are you there, Makita?
I am.
Oh,
can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Michelle, what I would say is that you and your group of friends or coaches, fellow coaches, make a commitment with each other that you can have those hard conversations and really look at some of the things that if you notice something, you see an exchange online, and you want to talk more about it, talk with each other about it, and then give each other permission to ask those hard questions. One of the things
I want to pause you there, Makita. Michelle is a woman.
Sure.
Of color.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. thank you. So, Michelle, I would say that understanding the reaction that white women are going to have to this conversation, to these
mm-hmm.
conversations, is a big part of being able to call them together and allow them to be able to be in that space. Recognizing, I think a good resource that helped me a lot was a book called White Fragility.
I love that
Robin
book.
DeAngelo.
Oh my God, I love that
yes.
book.
She
can you repeat
so much
the
about
author's
the,
name again?
Sure, Robin DeAngelo. And the White Fragility is actually written to white women in particular,
yes.
or white people in particular. And Michelle, what she does in that book is really detail the reactions that they have.
Yeah,
so
no, I know. It's like a handbook, actually, to do that. It's amazing.
Exactly. So using that to resource you in having that conversation so that when the reactions come, when the defensiveness, when the denial, when the tears, when the silence, when all of those things come, you're already equipped to know how to call them back into that safe space. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, actually. And, you know, I lent my partner the book. It's very funny. My partner's white. And the book has disappeared. I'm trying not to read anything into that. I'm trying hard. But, no, I've had conversations where I'm like, I need that book because I'm going to walk you through steps, you know, 3 through 2, 3 through 5, whatever.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I would say recognize the reactions that are going to come because they will come and then be equipped to know how to move them through those spaces when it happens.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And my apologies for making an assumption.
No, it's okay.
Great. Thank you, Michelle. Are there any other questions? Star two. Trouble with the technology here for some reason today. It's being really wonky. Give me one more second. Doesn't want to put Michelle back. Oh, here we go. Tanya.
Yeah, I found it. I mean, thank you so much for having this talk, Joanna and Makeda. This is great. I think the part that I've been doing a lot of reading, and this is a topic I'm passionate about as well, as a mixed person, but I find that, like, the explanation you gave, Makeda, about spiritual bypassing, like, it's a topic I get, but the way you put it just had it sink a couple of layers deeper for me. Like, I think there's a really fine line. I'm actually a psychotherapist, so I work with a lot of people who have been through experiences, like, regardless of, you know, whatever their race, color, sex, whatever, like, experiences I will never go through. And I have to always be mindful of, like, the trauma that they've experienced and that I can empathize, but I might not understand, or I might not know all the techniques, or my techniques might not work. And I just feel like, I don't know, it just helped me. I feel I'm going to do something that I feel even prouder of the work that I do, because I certainly don't spiritually bypass their pain. And so I'm actually really moved by having heard you and hearing someone articulate something that I feel like is something one has to cultivate, you know, to hold that space for someone else. So thank you, Makeda.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. I appreciate that, and you're welcome. Thank you. Yeah.
Good. Any other questions? Or sorry, guys. Again, I'm having a little bit of a technology issue here. It's happening. Okay. Makeda, I know that this topic, like we said at the beginning, we're just toe dipping in this hour, and I have a feeling that a lot of people listening are going to want to go deeper with it and deeper with you. Could you share with us how we might be able to do that?
Sure. So one of the things that's happening for me right now, Joanna, is I feel another evolution of my business coming. And my word for this year was opportunity is opportunity. And right after you invited me to participate in this call, I had a series of other things that came up that asked me to do a similar training in a few different ways. And I have a sense that my work is evolving to support white women in particular through trying to work through some of these things. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but I'm sort of beta testing what coaching a white woman, as she sort of looks at her privilege and looks at unpacking her bias and holding the space of that discomfort, might look like. And so I would say that if anyone is interested in sort of partnering with me in that exploration for me, but also for you, that I would love to have a conversation and see if that might be a good fit for us to talk about. And the best way to get in touch with me is by email. I'm not on Facebook as much as I used to be. I'm on Instagram more than Facebook, but email is the best bet. And my email is Makeda, and that's M as in Mary, A-K-E, D as in David, A, Makeda, at Makeda Pennycook. And my last name is spelled exactly as it sounds. Penny, P-E-N-N-Y, C-O-O-K with an E at the end. Pennycook at Makeda at MakedaPennycook.com. Best way to get in touch with me. And I am also, I'm making available a list of resources that could help you in continuing to do this work, because that is the best way for you to serve your clients and your coaching, is to do your own personal work. It's the greatest gift that you will give yourself and the greatest gift that you will give those that you will serve. And so to do your own work is the biggest and most important step in this whole process. And so I have a list of resources that I want to make available to anyone who would like it, of podcasts and books and blogs to follow and different people to follow on social media if you're wanting to get a little bit more information about what, how you can do this work. So those are just two things that I wanted to mention and say out loud.
Awesome. And we can email you for that second resource too.
Yes, you can email me. Yes.
Thank you so much for making all that available, Makita. I know I'm definitely taking advantage, for sure. And just thank you so much for sharing yourself with us today and all of this. It's been amazing, and just thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, and thank you for having me, and thank you to everyone who was here live or who will listen to the recording. It has been a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
Have a wonderful rest of your day, everyone.
I encourage you
to get in touch with Makita. We'll also include your email when we send out the recording. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye.